All right, thank you. Today I'll be talking about an outbreak of E. coli 0157 that we investigated last summer in Minnesota that was associated with multiple catered events. On July 17, 2014, a physician called the Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH, to report five individuals had presented to the emergency department of the local hospital with bloody diarrhea. Some, but not all, of the patients had tested positive for Shigatoxin at the clinical lab and ultimately for E. coli 0157H7 at MDH. All of the initial cases reported attending a catered picnic for elders of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa on July 11th. The picnic caterer operated from a University of Minnesota licensed kitchen at the Cloquet Forestry Center, which is within the boundary of the Fond du Lac Reservation in northeastern Minnesota. The caterer was very busy, catering over 200 events a year for the tribe, University of Minnesota, and other groups. A list of events from July 5th to 17th was obtained from the caterer. MDH staff interviewed event attendees about illness and food and beverage consumption with event-specific interview forms. A U of M sanitarian conducted an environmental health assessment at the catering kitchen, interviewed food workers, and collected invoices of suspected products. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture, or MDA, conducted a traceback investigation and collected samples of suspected products for testing. A case was defined as an individual who had E. coli 0157 isolated from stool culture that was within three bands of the main outbreak pattern by pulse field gel electrophoresis, or a catered event attendee who developed diarrhea defined as three or more loose stools in a 24-hour period that was either bloody or of three or more days of duration. The caterer was able to recall 12 events occurring during July 5th to 17th. MDH interviewed 199 attendees of seven events. 57 cases were identified from five events. 27 of these were laboratory confirmed. Confirmed cases included seven cases with severe diarrhea that were Shigatoxin negative at one clinical lab. However, because they were known attendees of the Elder Picnic, we requested that clinical materials be submitted to MDH. All seven cases were ultimately culture positive for E. coli 0157 at MDH. Five closely related X-spot patterns were observed among the case isolates. 19 isolates, or 70%, were the main outbreak pattern one. Five isolates were determined to be pattern two, and one isolate each were named patterns three, four, and five. Patterns two through five were each two or fewer bands from pattern one, with the exception of pattern four, which was four bands different from pattern one and two bands different from pattern two. The median age of cases was 62 years, ranging from 4 to 85 years. 65% were female, 61% had bloody diarrhea. The median incubation for cases was 4 days, and the median duration of illness was 6.5 days. 9 cases, or 16%, were hospitalized for 2 to 6 days. There were no hemolytic uremic syndrome cases or deaths. Here we have the epi-curve for this investigation. The known onset dates ranged from July 8th to 23rd. Cases are shaded to reflect event attendance. The blue boxes represent the majority of cases that were exposed at the Elder Picnic on July 11th. 40 cases were associated with this event. The purple boxes represent the 9 cases who were associated at a wedding that was held on July 12th. The yellow boxes are the 3 cases that were associated with a 3-day conference held during July 14th to 16th. The green box represents the 1 case associated with a focus group on July 16th, and the orange box represents the 1 case associated with the meeting that was held on July 17th. The majority of cases and controls interviewed attended the Elder Picnic. A case control study with only attendees of the picnic found that only consumption of potato salad was significantly associated with illness, with an odds ratio of 18.5 and a p-value of less than 0.001. The same potato salad was served at the picnic was also served at the 3-day conference and the meeting. On July 21st, MDA picked up leftover food from the caterer that was served at the events. The food picked up included potato salad and cut fruit. All 13 of 13 potato salad subsamples were positive for E. coli 0157. All of the fruit samples were negative. This picture shows a representative sample of the PFG patterns of human and food isolates identified as part of this outbreak. As with the case isolates, diversity was also observed among the potato salad isolates. 11 potato salad isolates were indistinguishable from at least one case isolate. 2 additional potato salad isolates had PFG patterns that were closely related to the main outbreak pattern, but were not found amongst the case isolates. The potato salad ingredients included potatoes, celery and onions, eggs, mayonnaise and mustard, dried dill, sugar, pickle juice, vinegar, commercially prepared potato salad, and seasoning. Many of the events featured similar menus. However, raw celery and onions were the only food items served at all 5 events with cases. Celery and onions were ingredients in the potato salad that was served at the elder picnic, 3-day conference, and the meeting. And celery sticks and chopped onions were served at the wedding. And chopped celery and onions were available as garnishes at the focus group. In a combined analysis including cases and controls from all events, only consumption of celery was independently associated with illness with an adjusted odds ratio of 10.1. Upon follow-up with the caterer, it was discovered that the caterer still had some celery and onions left over from the event, from the same shipment that served the events. On July 28th, MDA picked up everything that was left for testing. All of the samples were negative. The environmental health assessment revealed no improper practices or procedures for cooking, cooling, or evidence of cross-contamination in the catering kitchen. One ill food worker was identified and was positive for E. coli 0157. The employee had onset of illness on July 14th, which was after 2 of the events had already occurred, and reported tasting food during preparation. The potato salad was prepared over a 3-day period. On July 7th, the potatoes were boiled and cooled. The following day, the celery and onions were washed, and on July 9th, the potatoes were peeled and cut, and the potato salad ingredients were mixed into 4 5-gallon bins. On the 10th, the celery sticks for the wedding were cut and stored in water. On July 11th, the potato salad was served at the elder picnic. On the 12th, a vegetable tray including celery was assembled and served at the wedding. 2 days later, on July 14th, the potato salad was served at the conference. Celery that had been chopped and stored in water sometime during July 7th to 15th was served at the focus group on July 16th. Finally, on the 17th, the potato salad was served at the meeting. The caterer ordered all produce from one supplier. The celery served at all events was received on June 25th as part of one case of 24 heads. MDA, in collaboration with the California Department of Public Health, traced the celery back to a field in Salinas Valley, California. 5 soil and water samples were collected by the California Food Emergency Response Team and FDA on August 13th. All samples were negative for E. coli 0157. The inspectors noted that grazing cattle were occasionally present in the adjacent field, but were not in sight at time of inspection. To our knowledge, this is the first outbreak of E. coli 0157 associated with celery. Although the source of contamination was not definitively identified, cattle are a likely source. Cattle are a well-established reservoir for E. coli 0157. E. coli was not found in the environmental samples collected at the farm, but the sampling was very limited. Despite not being previously reported, celery is certainly a biologically plausible vehicle. Shigatoxin-producing E. coli outbreaks associated with leafy greens from California occur commonly. In this outbreak, shigatoxin tests performed at one clinical lab lacked the sensitivity to detect 7 or 44% of the 16 cases reported by one hospital. This result is consistent with the result of another study done by MDH comparing shigatoxin tests with culture-based methods that was presented during the afternoon session yesterday by Andrew Barron. This could have important implications for E. coli 0157H7 surveillance in this country because a growing proportion of cases tested by clinical labs by culture-independent methods may test falsely negative. I'd like to acknowledge our investigation partners here, both state and local, and with the tribe. And thank you. Any questions? Yes, that was my question when we heard that too. So I guess it's not that uncommon amongst caterers. They use the commercial potato salad as a glue. So it has kind of a pasty consistency, and it makes the potato salad last longer, and it gives it that consistent texture.
Now I see. So I guess I had a question about the case definition you used, mm-hmm. with the sort of three bands different, and sort of like how that unfolded in the process of the investigation. Was that sort of like a priori, we're going to use that as a sort of like catch-all, or did it sort of evolve over the investigation?
It evolved over the investigation. Okay. So we started with the main pattern. You know, 70% of the cases were that first pattern, which was a new pattern in Minnesota. And the pattern two, the one that had five cases, is closely related, but it's more common. It's one of our more common patterns. It evolved over the course of the investigation, starting just with that first one, and then we expanded out from there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was a massive outbreak. I have two questions actually. What varotoxins were most predominant in this outbreak, and was there any difference in sequelae associated with that one or two? And then secondly, what is your state's policy, I guess, for exclusion of high risk contacts, healthcare workers, daycare workers, and how did that impact your?
Yeah, so this was a very complex community outbreak, and a lot of it happened on the reservation. So we did end up excluding several food workers, both on the tribe and from the caterer, and people who worked in that worked in healthcare outside of that. So they were all excluded until they had two consecutive negatives at least 24 hours apart. And they can either do those at the state lab, so then they'll be done by IMS and PCR, or they can be done at their clinical lab by whatever the clinical lab does. And this was E. coli 0157, so our rules are usually E. coli 0157, they're always excluded until they've had two consecutive negatives. If we were dealing with a non-0157 E. coli, then we would exclude based on sugar toxin profile. So only sugar toxin 2 producers would be excluded, like the 0157s.
Dr. Ullman, CDC, CECO in Kentucky. I'm curious, were deer ever considered a possibility? Are they in that area? Because we have seen outbreaks where deer go through fields of vegetation and set. Alternatively, is this growing area downstream from the cattle area, or is it people?
That I don't know. It's our information that we got back from California and FDA was really kind of limited to exactly what was relevant to what we had. So, they did say that, there's around it, there's kind of a road and an alfalfa field, but as far as like the specific topography, I don't know. Cattle are sometimes around there, but not at that time. And they were also out there, about 2 months after the outbreak happened. It's a produce outbreak, so everything was gone by the time they were there.
Hi, I'm Rashida Hassan from CDC. Great presentation. Just a couple of questions. The different PFG patterns, did you see them associated with the different catering events, or were they kind of spread around? And then did you guys also look at maybe doing MLDA or possibly whole genome sequencing on these isolates to see how those related compared to the PFG pattern?
Yes. So, we felt, as the investigation evolved, we felt more confident with our decision to kind of allow diversity in PFG because we found the same diversity amongst the different events and amongst the potato salad isolates. So we saw diversity everywhere, and it was the same diversity. We did do MLVA, and they were matches. So we did not see diversity in MLVA. Whole genome sequencing we did not do.
Hi, Connecticut again. Not really an epi question, but more of a logistical question dealing with the tribe, because we have a couple tribal nations as well. Do you have to be invited in? And how? I know the day that we have something like this happen, it's going to be a very political kind of sticky situation. So I'd love to get a little insight from you as to how that progressed?
Yeah, so yes, we have to be invited onto the tribes. You know, we don't have jurisdiction there. This one, you know, was first reported as an outbreak on the reservation as part of the elder picnic, but it evolved into something that involved all Minnesota citizens. But you know, we approached the tribe with our EH person and with our tribal health coordinator or tribal liaison. So you know, we came to them and said, you know, this is what we think is going on. You know, this is kind of what we think we should respond to this, and what this is what the public health risk is, and you know, offered our services or our support and what they wanted from us. And they ended up saying, you know, we don't have the capacity to do this right now. We'd like you to do it. But I mean, as a caveat from that, going forward from that, I included them on, you know, all of our emails and calls and kept them in the loop of constantly what was going on, because their tribal clinic, essentially that hospital, was on the reservation, and that's who reported it to us first. So their tribal doctors were calling me and emailing me all the time, and that's how we got those isolates. It's just like, these people have bloody diarrhea, what do I do with them? They were really concerned and really interested in being a collaborative partner.
That's great.
Question.
Yeah.
You mentioned the role of the culture independent diagnostic test.
Mm-hmm.
So the 7 originally Chagas negative specimens were done through PCR or a panel, or how are they originally tested?
They're using ImmunoCard stat at the hospital.
Okay.
So they had 16 cases show up there. Only 9 of them are positive, but they sent us the reports on all of them.
Have they changed their testing?
No, but we talked.
Thank you.